The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Let me begin by updating you on yesterday's shooting in Brooklyn, which began just as I left the air. Good job by Mike Gallagher yesterday as he followed me on many of these stations and picking up the chaos and carnage. As a New Yorker, Mike would know. I do not know Brooklyn well. Of course, been there a few times over the years, but I don't know well. 33 shots fired inside of a subway train in Brooklyn. 10 wounded. 13 others treated for smoke inhalation. And Frank James, the person of interest, not called a suspect, but boy, it sounds like a suspect to me, had a 9mm handgun, at least one, which apparently jammed, and consumer-grade fireworks. I don't know what consumer-grade fireworks are. And a hatchet, gasoline. He had something planned in a deeply deranged mind, obviously. He's from Milwaukee, 5'5", black man dressed in a green construction vest and a gray hooded sweater. So just about everything you heard yesterday was wrong at the beginning. Orange construction vest, big black man. He's a little black guy. And they can't find him. He rented a U-Haul truck. He's gone. He's posted rants about Eric Adams, New York's new mayor, on YouTube. And, of course, all the neighbors in Milwaukee say, oh, quiet guy, didn't see him, saw him at the supermarket. They'll get him today. Michael Goodwin, not surprisingly, New York's best metro columnist in the New York Post, writes that after the latest bloodbath, time is running out for Governor Hochul and Mayor Adams to save New York City. Who wants to live in a city like this? A Sunset Park man asked a TV reporter Tuesday, then answered his own question. Nobody wants to live like this no more. Indeed, nobody wants to live in the city New York is becoming. It's going back to what it was when I first went there in 1980 with Richard Nixon moving from San Clemente, California, which I love, to the city of that never sleeps in March of 1980. And I hung out till August and then I skipped out for Ann Arbor and said, sorry, Mr. President, I'm out of here. Because 1980 New York, no one wanted to live in 1980 New York. It's been 42 years and nobody wants to live in 2022 New York. And that's because of Democrats. Right. Rudy rebuilt it. Rudy reopened it. Rudy got it going. Bloomberg, who is not really a Democrat, not a progressive, but a police guy, he kept it safe. And we've just seen 4 years, 8 years of de Blasio and now 8 months or 100 days, actually, of Adams and no turning it around. To the bigger picture of the world, no matter how bad it is on the New York City subway train, it's not Mariupol. Russian forces renew focus on southern and eastern Ukraine as they begin to position themselves for a massive assault on all of eastern Ukraine from Russia down to Odessa, just north of Odessa. The fate of the Ukrainian brigade in Mariupol is unknown. The pictures from drones, just devastating. According to my friends, Courtney Kuby and Carol Lee over at NBC News, they got a great report, which I've tweeted out this morning, on the $750 million military aid package that may be as ready as early as this week. So great. 50 days into it. And Team Biden says, we got to send another $750 billion. It would have helped in November. This is the team that's been there for 16 months. They cut off the Trump deliveries. We end up where we are. The Mariupol mayor says there are over 10,000 civilian corpses carpeting the streets of Mariupol. What happened here? Why did Putin so badly miscalculate what he thought would be a walk in the park? And he said a 48-hour invasion that's now in its 49th day. Hubris and isolation led Putin to misjudge Ukraine, writes Paul Sohn, Ellen Nakashima, Cheyenne Harris, and John Hudson in the Washington Post. Again, I tweeted this out last night. It had arrived on the web earlier than normal. And it's a very interesting assessment of how did Putin get so disconnected from reality. And as you read it, substitute the word Biden for Putin, and you'll realize that we've got a president who's just not very connected with anything either. No grand theory can explain the Ukraine crisis, writes Jinan Ganesh in the Financial Times. Good columnist, surveys all the Fukuyama, all the Huntington, all the sweeping theories, and it doesn't make any sense when you're a tyrant like Hitler and you invade Poland, you normally win. When you're Stalin and you invade Finland, you run into some trouble. But when you are Putin and you take on NATO's boundary, basically, it's not within NATO, but it's next to NATO, you get blown back and there's just no accounting for it. I have a post piece, what unanimous moral outrage looks like in the Senate, contemplating what it means to have a 100-0 vote against Russia on two matters, most favored nation and rapid acceleration of lend-lease. John Cornyn proposed the first, the latter one on this show first, as far as I know, in early January. And as I note in the column, it's been 84 days since John Cornyn on this show said we need a lend-lease. And they got it done last week, and it was 100-0. So I wrote my Washington Post column on that. You can find it by just Googling Hugh Hewitt Washington Post. And Archimedes said, give me a place to stand with a lever and I will move the whole world. Well, when you get 200-0 votes in the United States Senate, you've got the place to stand, which is a complete outrage and willingness to act against Russia based upon the atrocities and the unprovoked aggression. Now we have to extrapolate that to Iran Khomeini and, if necessary, to Xi's Chinese Communist Party and be ready to act and meet atrocity with force. And that they're the new Axis 2.0. And only talking about Russia is like only talking about Mussolini in 1938. Doesn't make any sense. Ukraine thwarted a sophisticated Russian cyber attack on the power grid yesterday. So we've got some help going on there, I'm pretty sure. The Ukraine war, however, initially caused the Germans to wake up and say, maybe we should rejoin NATO, really. And they'll say, oh, we're in NATO. We'll help you out. We sent 100 peacekeepers to Afghanistan. And we sent some weapons to Ukraine. Then they've changed their mind in less than 6 weeks. They were going to spend $79 billion a year on military. Now that's up in doubt. And it didn't take them long to crawl back into their hole of, we'll take everybody's money and everybody's energy. Boris Johnson, who has emerged as the leader of the West in this crisis, was fined for his parties during lockdown. Now, had he not displayed extraordinary leadership in the last 6 weeks, Boris would be done. But he has displayed extraordinary leadership in the last 6 weeks. And as a result, the British papers blast him a little bit, but they leave him alone. You know, I went through the rundown this morning looking for he must leave. And a lot of people say he should have left and would have left, but we need him now. That walk around Kyiv with Zelensky was something else. In Shanghai, COVID-19 is causing a nightmare. People are starving. The rest of the world should watch what is happening in Shanghai, warns Robin Harding in the Financial Times. In the Wall Street Journal, Chinese are stockpiling food across the country because they're afraid they're not going to be able to do anything except lock down, and Shanghai enters its second week. It's an utter nightmare. Speaking of Khomeini, he says the nuclear talks are going well. He's dealing with Larry Curley and Mo from the United States. But they're not going to determine what he does, whether or not they go well. He's another dictator. Dealing with him is like dealing with Putin. In fact, it is dealing with Putin because Putin is our go-between. The Biden administration sees no problem with this. The COVID toll exceeded 500 million this week dead around the world. 500 million dead. Now, it is changed into a variant that is less killing so that China will not have the same death rate that we did in the U.S. with the first coronavirus iteration, and then with the subsequent iterations of Delta. Omicron is not killing that many more people, but we've felt the brunt of it. And I'm increasingly coming to the conclusion there is nothing that anyone could have done short of what they do in China, which we will not do in the United States. And their economy is not going to recover for a decade because of this. And at some point, you do what you did. Until we figured it out, we got the vaccine done, we rushed the vaccine out, and then you go back to normal. In Philadelphia, they're going back to masking indoors. It's insane. It's as stupid as the decision to cancel the AP and honors classes at Patrick Henry High School in San Diego, and I will be back on that subject. I got a lot of mail about that yesterday. People can't believe it. I still can't believe it. Equity. So we're not going to have AP. We're not going to have honors classes. We're not going to care about our search for excellence in the classroom. They haven't dropped sports yet, but give it a time. Of course, the rocking story yesterday morning as I went off the air, I said inflation looks like it's going to be 8.4%. It was 8.5%, four-decade high again. It can't keep up. Record high office lease expirations are going to rock the economy next. And a Fed official told the Financial Times this morning, we're going to have a recession. In essence, that's it. Meanwhile, the lieutenant governor of New York was indicted and had to resign yesterday. And when I come back, I'm going to read to you about Patrick Henry High School. But the airlines are thinking they're going to get rid of the COVID mask pretty soon. A few of the never people are screaming, but the airlines know it's time. And then Apple's Tim Cook warns no antitrust laws needed here.
Right. Right.
I'm not going to believe that. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more with you. But Patrick Henry, when we return, the high school in San Diego that is warning parents across the country that the assault on your children everywhere continues. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Carla Sands was our ambassador to Denmark under President Trump. She is now a candidate for Senate in the Keystone State in Pennsylvania, where I cover the state. Yesterday, I talked with, or a couple days ago, David McCormick. Coming up later in the show, I'll be talking with Kathy Barnett. That's three of the top five in the race. I believe that Carla Sands and the Real Clear Politics average of polls is in third place and moving up. Good morning, Carla Sands. How are you, Madam Ambassador?
Good morning, Hugh. How are you? And good morning to your listeners.
I'm good. Would you talk to us about the state of the race? I look at the RCP average. You're in double digits. The only other two are Oz and McCormick. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm less than 2 points behind Oz in the latest poll that I just sent over to you. I got that yesterday. Pretty exciting. You know, voters in Pennsylvania want to elect someone who shares their values, who is pro-life and pro-First Amendment, pro-Second Amendment, someone who's a constitutional conservative who they can trust to put those America First decisions in place, and that they're ready on day one to not just talk about things, but to act. And I'm the only one in this race on either side of the aisle that has the foreign policy experience, the defense policy experience, and the trade policy experience, understanding what needs to get done and how to do it.
I'm going to come back and talk about Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, who's going to be the Democratic nominee in a moment. First, I want to ask you about what everyone's talking about. President Trump endorsed Dr. Oz and astonished me, completely befuddled everyone I know in Pennsylvania, because Dr. Oz is relatively new to this game. Yes, he's a TV celebrity like the president was, and yes, he's rich like the president is, but you're not exactly a shrinking violet or without assets, and you served Trump for 4 years as ambassador to Denmark. How surprised were you? Why did he do what he did, do you think, Carla?
Well, Hugh, you know, first of all, for your listeners, they can go to my website, carlasands.com. They can follow me on social media, Carla Sands and Carla Sands for Senate. I am the only reliable conservative in this race. And if conservatives will get behind my campaign and we don't split that conservative vote, I'm going to win this election, because it's either me or two rhinos in November. And so one of the rhinos is going to win if conservatives don't get behind me and they split that vote. I was surprised, I have to tell you. But at the same time, you know, it's disappointing when the president doesn't get good advice, because at the end of the day, his endorsed candidate still can't close the deal because voters don't trust him, because he's flip-flopped so much on those fundamental conservative issues that matter to our voters. Our Republican voters care about abortion, critical race theory, those transgender minors and the surgeries and the Second Amendment. And these are troubling times. I don't think that we can have this. I think the voters in this Commonwealth need someone that they can count on day in and day out. And I have that public record, and it's me.
You know, the interesting thing, Ambassador, is you just mentioned a few hot button issues. I have in my hand the Washington Post column by Corinna Cohn yesterday, What I Wish I'd Known When I Was 19 and Had Sex Reassignment Surgery. It's pretty difficult reading. I'm not going to read it on the air, but it is of a piece with the collapse of sort of cultural milestones in the country as being so provocative, so absolutely red button issue. And yet Dr. Oz has been where on these issues, including the life issue?
Yes, he is. He does not share our values, even though he sounds like a conservative today, because he has that public record. All of us do. And so folks can go back and check my record. They can check everyone else's record in this race. Again, I have a website, carlasands.com. If your listeners want to volunteer or support our campaign, I can't do this alone. And we have our social media, because we know that there's three of us in the lead right now, two weak Republicans and me. And we know that the world is on fire right now. We need someone who can act immediately and decisively.
I want to switch over to Europe and NATO and Germany in a moment. But one last question. Did the president call you before or after his endorsement of Oz? Did he talk to you about it?
So I did get a call. And I will just say that, you know, although the president says he's a big fan of mine, that doesn't get me much. I'm the one that delivered for the America First policies. Everybody knows that in this Commonwealth. They know my capabilities. And sometimes celebrity seems to trump capability. But the fact is that I will deliver for the voters of Pennsylvania, increasing our energy, bringing down the cost of everything. In fact, when our voters are putting gas in their car, I want them to think of Carla Sands for the Senate. I'm going to bring that price down.
Ambassador,
working families are in trouble. Yeah.
What's interesting to me is to follow up. Whenever I talk to the president or the former president, I never talk about what they say. I always talk about what I ask or respond, because that's what they say is off the record. What I say is just me. And I've often been bewildered by a call from the former president. What was your feeling when you hung up after you talked to him? Were you disappointed, bewildered, angry? What was it?
So our campaign is actually doing better now than before that endorsement. It's unbelievable. We're having outreach from across the Commonwealth and really the country. We have increased our fundraising. I believe that conservatives are now really awake, that if they don't want to lose this seat to John Fetterman in November, because I don't believe that a rhino Republican can beat John Fetterman. And here's why: our base will stay home. Pennsylvania, we like our traditions. We like our First Amendment and our Second Amendment. We are staunchly pro-life Republicans. And I don't think he's going to be able to close the deal. And so we really feel emboldened, and we feel the Christian community is coming out of the churches and out of their homes and saying, we're done with this cultural revolution that's happening in our country. We're taking our country back. We're not going to let our kids, their innocence be stolen by these radical Democrats that are in power. We're not going to let them be indoctrinated to hate each other and hate our country. We're not going to let them open our border and have 20% of our American citizens be illegal immigrants. And that's what's projected at the end of this administration. So we have to send America First senators to Washington to stop. We're going to be the bulwark against the radical Democrats that are in control, that are attempting to fundamentally change our country.
All right, but I'm going to land the plane one more time, Ambassador. When you were done talking to the former president, were you mad at him or disappointed or just confused?
Neither. I loved working for President Trump. It was the honor of my lifetime. Sometimes people get bad advice. We're onward and upward. We're doing better than we've ever done. I'm going to win this race if conservatives will consolidate behind me. And certainly our campaign is energized today.
Now, tell me, I know your campaign, so you don't have a lot of time to follow the Ukraine thing, but hopefully you're listening to this show and you get enough from me and from your brief moments off reading the newspaper. Germany looked like they were going to actually rejoin NATO in a real way. I mean, be a real player. It's taken them 6 weeks to back down and run away. Are you surprised? Denmark hasn't done that, has it?
You know, I am not following European issues as much as I am Pennsylvania and United States issues, because here's what I'll say about Ukraine. Ukraine is a terrible tragedy, what's happening. We have to give aid to these people and arms to these people. The Congress passed $13 billion in aid, and I don't think much more than $1 million has been sent over. Biden needs to get those resources to Zelensky now. But what I'll say is there are so many deadbeat European nations that would rather sit back and let American taxpayers carry their security and pay for it rather than put their own funds in. They want their free college and free health care. It's wrong. When I'm elected to the Senate, I'm going to work to hold our allies in NATO responsible for what they owe us. President Trump told Angela Merkel she owed him $1 trillion. She probably did, because he's a deal guy. He understands when somebody's cheating on a deal. Denmark wasn't paying their fair share when I got there. I got them to pay more, certainly, but I don't know that they're at 2% yet. I think we have to focus on what's happening here at home. The death by fentanyl of so many of our young, it's coming from China, it goes through Mexico, and comes up our southern open border. We have to take care of our seniors and our working families that are paying so much today. I just saw today it came out, if we were doing the inflation index the way we did in the 70s and 80s, this would be 19.5% inflation. I believe that because when I go to the grocery store or the gas station, it didn't feel like 8.5%. It felt like so much more. I can't imagine the pain that these families are facing trying to put food on the table and take care of their kids and put gas in the gas tank. So I think that we have to stop the out of control spending in Washington. We have to harvest our energy. It's clean. And we have to put the pipes in the ground and power our country with domestic energy and then send some to our allies in Europe so they're not dependent on places like Russia, Venezuela, and Iran for their energy. We know we can do this. I actually called on the main stage at CPAC for Operation Warp Speed for American Energy. That's what I want to see. I want us to use emergency powers and harvest and move it around our country. We can do this. We have the capability. We have to have the will and leadership. And that's what I will be, is the leadership in Washington. We can do this like a Marshall Plan. Put the pipes in, harvest the energy. We know that that's one of the reasons our air is cleaner today, cleaner than anywhere in the world, is because of our natural gas. And Pennsylvania has enough to power the entire United States for over 300 years. Just right here. It's unbelievable, and it's a game changer. I like 300 years to transition to clean energy. Can you imagine the innovation going on over the next 300 years?
Ambassador Sands, I got to close by saying our mutual fund National Security Advisor, Ambassador O'Brien, who endorsed you in this race and has brought you to my attention and continues to say Carla Sands is the real deal.
Thank you.
We were talking this week about the race and about who would beat Fetterman. Because Fetterman is just an out-there lefty. I mean, an out-there lefty.
Yes, he's a communist populist. Yes.
Okay, so the question is, why are you better than the other four Republicans to beat Fetterman? Because that's the key question for voters like me who want a majority in the United States Senate.
Sure. Again, my website is carlasands.com. I hope your listeners will go there. I can beat John Fetterman because, first of all, our base knows they can trust me. I have been America First since 2016. I have a public record. I'm a lifelong Republican and conservative activist. They can check. And then second, I can bring those suburban voters on board. I'm going to make sure that we at the federal level we implement that cities and towns can't defund their police. So we have safe streets. They care about this. But also, I'm going to bring opportunity to Pennsylvania. Our voters in Pennsylvania know that our Commonwealth has been going in a bad direction for over 40 years. Jobs and companies moved offshore and our towns hollowed out. Our economy actually went down by $1.7 billion in 2019. That was the best economic year of my lifetime. So I will work to reverse that. I understand how to do it. I work to increase jobs as the U.S. ambassador. I increased our exports over 43% while I was there. I understand about defense policy. I worked to counter Russia and China while I was the U.S. ambassador. And we were so successful that I was awarded the Department of Defense's highest civilian honor. It's called the Medal for Distinguished Public Service.
Ambassador Sands, we are now out of time. I want to thank you so much. Good luck in the closing sprint. Voting is already underway in Pennsylvania. Carla Sands on Twitter and Carla Sands on the web. Thank you, Madam Ambassador. Come right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show, Wednesday edition from the Beltway. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway. At large remains the shooter on the Brooklyn subway yesterday. Inflation at 8.5% and $750 million of new arms going from the United States to Ukraine. I'll cover all the breaking news after I speak with my guest. Kathy Barnett is on the ballot in Pennsylvania running for the United States Senate, and I am trying to talk to everyone in the Keystone State in the closing sprint. Kathy, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Great to have you on the program. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me on. What can I say? The people here in Pennsylvania, those who actually live here in Pennsylvania, are rallying around me in all earnest. And I've been telling everyone what President Trump did in endorsing Mehmet Oz was perhaps the best thing that could have happened to my campaign. What I believe the president has done is awaken the sleeping giant within his own base. My campaign, we're traveling over 1,500 miles every single week. We've been keeping this pace up for months now. No one is spending as much time with the people as I am. And although I walk into a room, more than half of the people have never been involved in politics before 2020, but there was still a significant number. I'm sure you saw the poll where 51% of the people were undecided, 40% of the people were undecided. Guess what? Because Mehmet Oz ID is so high, that works both ways. And how it falls in the Conservative Party is that we all know who he is. And we all know that he's not a conservative. We've seen him for many years talking about red flag laws, mimicking or, being very disrespectful towards life within the womb. We saw what he did during 2020, during the summer of 2020 with Black Lives Matter and encouraging that kind of behavior. We know what his position is on transgenderism. So what the president actually did was to make people wake up and get engaged. And my Twitter followers, if it's indicative of anything, the day after it jumped up over 13,000. Today, it is more than double. This is just within the past couple of days. We're raising six figures at this point. I'm telling you, whereas the media only wanted to talk about two people in this race, now we have pierced through whatever that bubble was, and my name is on everyone's lips. So that's where we are, and it has truly been amazing. I'm so grateful to the people who have made it viable.
It's the Beltway bubble, and I live in it, Kathy Barnett. But I'm from Warren, Ohio, 7 miles from Sharon, PA, so I know all about the people over on the other side of the border that we try and keep out of Ohio. I hope you're not a Steelers fan.
I could care less.
Okay, good. That's the right answer.
My husband is a Steelers fan. Sorry.
Oh, that TMI. You shouldn't have told me that. That's over now. Now, you went to Troy. You served the United States American military in the Army. Tell us about yourself, because a lot of people are driving around Harrisburg. Yeah. A lot of people driving around Philly and Pittsburgh this morning, up in Sharon and Erie. I'm all across the state. They don't know you. And this is your chance to tell them who you are.
Well, let me tell you, I grew up on a pig farm in southern Alabama. I grew up below the bottom rung of the economic ladder. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, an outhouse in the back, and a well on the side. When I say poor, we were so poor we couldn't afford the other O. We were just O, and it was ridiculous. But my family, I never heard one person ever say to me, Kathy, you're a victim. You're Black, you're a woman, you're poor. All the odds are against you. No one ever said that to me. Instead, I saw my family wake up early, work hard, go to bed late, take care of not only their own family, but work within the community as well. So I did not grow up with a psychology of lack. And as a result, I became the first in my family to go and finish college. I spent 10 years in the military where I was accepted into officer candidacy school. I spent time in the financial industry with both A.G. Edwards & Sons and Bank of America Capital Asset Management, corporate America. I was an adjunct professor of corporate finance, authored my first book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, Being Black and Conservative in America, that went number one on Amazon at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. Homeschooled my kids, political commentator, national speaker, a whole lot of journeys in between, and now I'm running for U.S. Senate. And like I tell people all the time, only in America do you hear that arc in my story time and time again. I believe this is the greatest country that has ever existed, but I believe our country is in trouble, and we need not another movie star. We don't need someone who has spent his entire career enriching China as Dave McCormick has. I truly believe Dave McCormick is a Hunter Biden laptop just waiting to happen. And what we need are people who understand what it is we're about to lose. That America that allowed me to claw my way from underneath the rock, that America is about to come to a close. These Democrats, and even some on our own political side of the aisle, they're not playing with us. This really isn't a fight between Democrats and Republicans as much as it is between those who are in power versus the rest of us, those who have versus those who have not. And we need leadership. We need people who have a backbone sturdier than ear cartilage, standing up for us and pushing back against this narrative that is truly destroying our country.
Kathy Barnett, on the Hugh Hewitt Show, I invite everyone on. But when you take a slug at someone like McCormick and say he's a Hunter Biden laptop away, there is no indication that there's a Hunter Biden laptop with David McCormick, right? That's just, that's...
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm just saying, that was rhetoric. There is no laptop about David McCormick, right? I haven't missed something.
No, exactly. Well, no, I believe what people understand what I'm saying is that Hunter Biden has some insidious behavior or dealings with China giving so much of their money and resources to Hunter Biden, who had absolutely no real skill sets that would cause someone like China to give him so much money. And what I'm inferring directly is that Dave McCormick is the number one foreign shareholder of Chinese stocks. All of us know you do not become the number one foreign shareholder of Chinese stocks and gain that kind of access to China's market without completely surrendering yourself over to the one China way. Now, of course, he wants to pretend that he is America first and all about America and just another Opie from Piscoki walking around in his jeans. But we understand the backstory of that. And that is what I'm inferring. That is a Hunter Biden laptop waiting to happen once we open that up and begin to really look behind the curtains. Unfortunately, Dave McCormick and Mehmet Oz refused to debate. They refused to get up in any serious platform and have a conversation and be able to answer those questions. So what we're looking at is the research, the opposition research, the news articles, and actually what they have said.
So tell me a little bit about your reaction to President Trump's endorsement of Dr. Oz, because a lot of people were flabbergasted, some dumbfounded, some angry, and some said, OK, I'll vote for Oz. What was Kathy Barnett's reaction?
Well, I mean, you know, initially it was a shock, right? I mean, I was downtown Philadelphia. I've been working with the Horn of Africa. There's or those who have come here from the Horn of Africa. There's over 100,000 of those from Sudan, Somalia, Eritrea, Ethiopia, who live here in Pennsylvania, highly concentrated between Harrisburg and Philadelphia. I've been working with them for several months. They hosted a very large fundraiser for me this past Saturday, and we were registering every single person, changing their registration from Democrat to Republican. That's what I was doing as someone turned on their phone and showed me what Donald Trump had done. And of course, my initial reaction was like, oh my goodness, doesn't he know he's not really a conservative? But very quickly thereafter, I saw what a lot of people are seeing, and that is across social media, my name is on everyone's lips. So like I said, like I started off, President Trump's endorsement of Oz is truly one of the best things that could have happened to our campaign. A lot of good things have happened to our campaign, but that was perhaps one of the best ones right on time as we now are 33 days away from one of the most consequential elections. And that is, who are we going to put up against perhaps Fetterman in the general election? I'm the only one who can win this particular race.
So let's close, Kathy Barnett, by reminding everyone what your website is, what your Twitter handle is, and where they can find you.
Hugh, thank you so much for this opportunity to come and talk to your audience. You can find me, Google me, DuckDuckGo me, or go directly to Barnett4Senate.com. My Twitter handle is @Kathy4Truth, Kathy4Truth. Thank you guys so much. I am viable only because of you. So thank you, each and every one of you who have been donating and just sending words of encouragement, door knocking, and a whole lot of other things. Thank you.
Kathy Barnett, great to have you on. We will talk to you after the election if you are the nominee. Kathy Barnett of Pennsylvania. Follow her on Twitter @Kathy4Truth. That's Kathy with a K, the number 4 Truth. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway, joined by Congressman Michael Gallagher, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, a member of the House Armed Services Committee from the great state of Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman. My old friends from NBC days, Courtney Klubi and Carol Lee, report this morning that the Pentagon is preparing $750 million more in weaponry, which is great. Is it the right weapons? Are they getting them there in time for Ukraine?
Well, to take the second question first, the answer is no. Obviously, we've been behind the curve since the start of this. It is much more difficult to get weapons into a country, to a partner on the ground when you're in the midst of a conflict than it would have been to do it on the front end. And that is the big lesson from the Ukraine conflict that we must learn and apply to Taiwan. It is time to arm Taiwan yesterday before the conflict begins. The best way to prevent a war in Taiwan that would potentially involve two nuclear armed states, America and China, is to arm our friends in Taiwan to the teeth now before it's too late. And indeed, the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs admitted as much when I questioned them in the Armed Services Committee last week, that deterrence failed in Ukraine, and perhaps the only thing that could have prevented it was more robust American hard power. Point one. Point two, as for the right mix of weaponry, I think this is a good step forward. I have reporting or suggestions that we are finally getting the pieces of the puzzle together necessary to take Slovakia up on its offer to provide the S-300 air defense system. This $750 million will largely be used to provide more of what we've been providing, Stingers, Javelins, things like that. So this is a positive step forward. I think that's why you've seen so much bipartisan support in the House and the Senate for it. But again, not to be too critical of the administration, they've just been behind the curve from the start of this, and they naively assumed that you can rely solely on sanctions and hashtag diplomacy in order to deter a KGB thug like Putin. And that proved to be wrong in a very costly fashion in Ukraine.
Now, Congressman, I got a new column up over at the Washington Post on the fact that we have a new axis, Russia, Khomeini in Iran, and Xi in China. And being critical of Putin and being like critical of Mussolini in 1938. What about Tojo and Hitler? And we've got these other two adversaries. You've recommended steps to help Taiwan. What about helping Israel and the other states in the Arab partnership with Israel threatened by Iran?
Well, this is critical, Hugh, because what have we seen in the last few days? And something that is really unprecedented, or at least in my lifetime, I've never seen. There was basically a sort of a Saturday Night Live sketch that came out of Saudi Arabia criticizing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And I think that gives you a window into just how far the relationship between the United States and our traditional Arab allies in the Middle East has frayed. And that is a function of the fact that the Biden administration has pursued a resurrection of the Obama-Iran deal. And of course, by doing that, they are messing up all of the progress we made in the Trump administration with the Abraham Accords. The only way to produce stability in the greater Middle East is to intensify and to harness this unprecedented cooperation that we're seeing between the Sunni Arab Gulf states and Israel. And because the Biden administration is so intent on getting a deal with Iran at any price, they are messing up that opportunity. So there is much more we can be doing to support our ally Israel, as well as the Sunni Arab Gulf states. But it starts with abandoning this attempt to resurrect the Iran deal, abandoning this attempt to give the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism billions and billions of dollars. And remember, Hugh, on the campaign trail, Joe Biden, who campaigned as a moderate and has governed as a progressive, promised on matters of foreign policy to get a deal with Iran that was, quote, longer and stronger than Obama did. Well, I guarantee you, and I know for a fact, that the deal they are trying to finalize with the Iranian regime is weaker and shorter than the Obama-Iran deal. So if they go further down this path, Hugh, it will completely undermine any progress we've made on restoring American deterrence in a bipartisan fashion. And it will weaken our position in the Middle East. It will further anger our allies in the region. And ultimately, it will produce chaos, death, and destruction in a region where they're trying to minimize U.S. commitments it will suck them back in, just as it sucked the Obama administration back into the region after they abandoned Iraq for political purposes, after they naively set up a red line in Syria that they could not enforce. And oh, by the way, Hugh, there should be a little bit of deja vu, because the Biden administration effectively established a red line in Ukraine if Putin used chemical weapons. Well, now we're getting some initial indications that he may have used chemical weapons. So what are they going to do about that? They promised a proportional response. And if they fail to deliver on that, American deterrence will further be undermined across the world.
Congressman, let's go back to Ukraine now. I try to be an optimist about these things. If you're on House Intel, your buddy Tom Cotton is on Senate Intel, you only use open sources on the radio. Here's what I fear. I fear that everyone thinks Ukraine is much stronger than they are because they beat back the Russians in the north. And now the Russian tanks in the vast plain around Mariupol are positioning themselves. There are 10,000 dead bodies on the streets of Mariupol. People should put that in the context of Brooklyn yesterday. 33 wounded are incapacitated on a subway. Imagine 10,000 corpses in a city. What could we do? What should we do when the Russian tanks begin to roll out of the Donbass through Mariupol, destroying everything in front of them, heading to Kyiv from the other side?
Well, I think our best strategy now is to provide the Ukrainians with all of the hard power requests that they have made. Now, again, as we started off this conversation, we've made progress on that front. Obviously, they're using stingers and javelins, the devastating effect, but there is more that we can do. There's more we can do to harness some of the offers that our Eastern European allies, NATO allies, have made. And the fact is, right now, some of our Western European NATO allies, like Germany, despite having made dramatic promises at the start of this conflict, maybe wavering on those. So if America leaves, if America robustly says to the entire NATO alliance that we are going to give Zelensky everything on his wish list, because we believe that the Ukrainians can actually win, which we should believe that, then I think that gives us our best chance to push back on Russian aggression on the ground in Ukraine, assuming, as I think is correct to assume, that the president continues to rule out any use of American hard power unilaterally on the ground of Ukraine.
Congressman, let me just throw something, one thing at you. We got all these A-10s sitting there in Arizona, and we're not going to use them again. They created the highway of death in 1991 when we took Saddam out of Kuwait. And the A-10 is a tank killer. We could have trained Ukrainian pilots in 6 weeks. These pilots are good. We could have done that. But there's always been this assumption that it's going to be a six-hour war, a six-day war. Now it's a six-week war. It's going to be a 60-week war. Why don't we do the Syria stuff? Because they continue to control most of their air. They're getting additional air defenses. Why not give them A-10s and train them how to use it? It doesn't take a good pilot that long.
Because the Biden administration fears escalation. That is at the heart of all of the hesitation from the start. It's that fear of provoking Russia has guided our policy from the start. That's the reason we did not deliver the MiG-29 to
There are 10,000 corpses in Mariupol. I mean, how much more can they escalate? They're killing everyone they find.
Exactly. But that is not the mindset of the model UN team that is running American foreign policy right now. And it is the more you fear escalation, ironically and tragically, the more you incentivize escalation by someone like Vladimir Putin. The only language he understands is that of hard power, American force, and our fear has been escalatory throughout this process. The MiG-29 decision was made even more ridiculous by the fact that the Secretary of State signaled that we wanted to go forward with it, that he gave a green light internationally to our allies. And then they walked it back, and it made us just look completely incoherent. Again, Hugh, I mean, I'm not suggesting any of this is easy, but we have just been behind the curve from the start of this crisis. We have been reacting to events, and I believe that we'll never be able to test this hypothesis that had we put in place more robust hard power from the start in the hands of Ukrainians on the ground, we could have had a chance of preventing this war in the first place and preventing all of this needless death and destruction. And it is the fact that we didn't is what has produced chaos in Ukraine, what has weakened our deterrent posture, not just in Europe, but all across the world. And we need to learn some hard lessons before it's too late. We need to invest in American hard power. And the Biden defense budget does not do it. It does the precise opposite. They're cutting conventional hard power and putting all their eggs in the basket of something called integrated deterrence, which is a fancy phrase to cover for the fact that they want to cut conventional hard power. That is a dangerous strategy for America. It's why we need to retake control of the House of Representatives and pull the emergency brake on all of these destructive policies and try to restore American deterrence before it's too late in other regions of the world.
Well said, Congressman Mike Gallagher, per usual. Thank you. Follow him at Rep Gallagher online at Twitter. And we'll talk to him again next week. Get those weapons flowing. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Jonathan Swan is the best political reporter in Washington, D.C., about whom I know nothing about their politics. I really have no idea. And I've spent some time with Jonathan in the company of very interesting people. I have no idea if he's a Democrat or Republican. He's just a very fine reporter. Good morning, Jonathan. Good to have you back.
Morning, Hugh. Thanks so much for having me.
I loved the tweet from 2 days ago. Hannity and Melania for the win. Now, I've had on this morning Kathy Barnett. I've had on Carlos Sands. I had on David McCormick. Oz won't do the show. I don't know why. I think maybe he's afraid of an Eric Greitens moment.
So would I. I'd like to hear that interview.
I'm not going to Eric Greitens him because he's not Eric Greitens. I'm just curious, though, when you write Hannity and Melania for the win, I trust you. Why does Sean, I haven't talked to Sean about this, why does Sean support Dr. Oz?
Well, I haven't talked to Sean about it, but my understanding from others in Trump's orbit is that Sean Hannity and Dr. Oz are personal friends and have known each other for a long time. And he's been one of the key people encouraging former President Trump to endorse Dr. Oz. So that's what I know. And he's obviously been having Dr. Oz on his show a lot as well, which, you know, is fine. I mean, he hosts a show. That's great. But it's clear from those appearances that he supports him.
Well, yeah. And by the way, I don't have a dog in the hunt in Pennsylvania or Ohio or anywhere other than Missouri where I don't want Eric Greitens. I want the Senate back. Which leads me to your BAFO interview with Leader McConnell. By saying I want the Senate back, I want 51 Republicans or more in charge so that Leader McConnell returns to his position of controlling the floor of the Senate. When you sat down with him, Jonathan, on camera or off, what is he most concerned about? Because I think it's Missouri, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it seemed pretty clear to me Missouri is the race he's most concerned about. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does get involved there, if Greitens holds up. I think my sense is from talking, not this is not directly from Leader McConnell, but from people who are, I would say, familiar, who have spoken to him, familiar with his thinking, is that he is sort of in wait-and-see mode in that race, seeing what's happening to Greitens' polling. I think if he stays durable and looks like he could win, I wouldn't be surprised if you see the outside vehicle, SLF, spend some money. Because, I mean, when I asked him about Greitens and, you know, laid it all out, I mean, he laughed. I mean, he doesn't think Greitens is electable.
No, he's not. I mean, it's stuff. A complete, right. It's a meltdown. He's a scarecrow on fire in a field in Missouri. And if you do what he's done, there's just no way you can come back from it. Let me ask you, though, about, does he feel the same about Ohio? Josh Mandel is coming up. I've had on JD this week. I've had on Matt Dolan and Jane Timken. I'll get Mike Gibbons back. And I think to even it up, I've got to have Matt Dolan back one more time after Josh Mandel today. But does he have any concerns about anyone in the Ohio race?
I don't get the sense he's as concerned about Ohio. Certainly nowhere near that he is about Missouri. I think of those people you mentioned, My understanding is that the person he probably least prefers in that field that you just mentioned would be J.D. Vance. But again, there's no one in that field that's comparable to Eric Greitens.
Now, I am going to have next hour, the first time on, the lady who's running in Washington State against Patty Murray. And I have just not been paying attention because Washington State went so deep blue. But apparently the red wave is so large, Jonathan, that Washington State is in. I knew Nevada was in play and Adam Laxalt is doing well, but I didn't know about this. Did that come up at all?
No, I haven't talked to him about that. That's interesting. I've heard from a few Republican strategists that they're still in this sort of, we'll believe it, you know, sort of, it sort of seems too good to be true category. But yes, there has been some polling that shows this race is unusually tight. And if it really is a tsunami, that's when you see some of these races that people just couldn't have even imagined a year ago coming online. So I don't think they're thinking about it yet as somewhere they're going to allocate real resources, but it's certainly something they're watching with interest.
Now, I put in the category of Jonathan Swan, Josh Kroshauer, who's just a straight down the middle reporter. He has a column out on Iowa this morning, Jonathan. Iowa has gone from purple to red to deep red. They're not going to have any congressmen standing. They're not even going to have a senator on the ballot against Chuck Grassley, which is malpractice. I think that's happening in Pennsylvania as well. Just take us up to 30,000 feet. You cover politics. I'm going to come back to a couple other issues in a second. But up at 30,000 feet, do you see all of the blue washing out of the non-coastal areas and that the heartland of the country is red?
It's certainly been the very pronounced trend. And I mean, probably this year as something to sort of draw 30,000 foot conclusions is it's the best political environment for Republicans since 2010. And so you could have some really astonishing results that are atypical, but yeah, absolutely. As a macro trend, for sure, that's what's happening. And Democrats don't really seem to have answers for it. I'm not seeing any anyway from the national leadership.
They don't. Now, I want to go back to an interview you did with Ambassador Roz, who you and I both know. Have we heard anything from the ambassador since the United States State Department abandoned her in the middle of the Taliban takeover? You sat down with her a couple of weeks afterwards in the most important interview that I've seen that nobody else saw. What has happened? Have you heard from her?
You know, I texted her when I saw a story that she eventually had to shut down the embassy, which was inevitable. And, you know, I think she did so with a very heavy heart. She was complete, as you and I both know from talking to her, she was just basically abandoned. She, her own leader, you know, jetted off in a helicopter.
The opposite of Zelensky, right? He's like the anti-Zelensky.
No, that's exactly right. Adani did the anti-Zelensky. And then she couldn't even get a meeting with the Biden administration. So she was really just on her own. I mean, it was one of the most painful interviews I've ever done because, you know, I went to the embassy where she was, and it was just this lonely flag out there. She's flying the flag, refused to put up the Taliban flag. She had the Taliban trying to get her to do Zoom calls with them, and she was rejecting them. And then she could get nothing from the U.S. State Department. You reminded me, I actually need to check in with her. But I know the last I texted with her was when she had to close down the embassy.
Please convey my regards and the opportunity to come on and tell. I hope she leads a movement on behalf of Afghan women across the United States because they need. Ukraine has got our attention. There I will turn. Your native land, Australia, has been very good in the fight with Ukraine. Scott Morrison has called an election. It's unfair to do this to you just because you're an Australian who's now an American. But what do you think? I mean, Morrison did the tough lockdown thing. He's not like Mr. Popular down there.
So this is dangerous territory, Hugh, because I'm so detached from the day-to-day. But what I hear from my friends back home is that he's in real trouble. And there's been a whole lot of issues that are, you know, domestic issues that have nothing to do with COVID. You know, there's been terrible floods. He's been criticized for his handling of that. I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. He's been written off. Scott Morrison has been written off so many times before and has come back. I would be very careful about dismissing him. He's a survivor and he has ways of pulling things out, but apparently things don't look so good for him.
I'm not going to dismiss him only because I think the world's politics are up in the air after Ukraine. I think it's a wake-up call that we have long needed. Even the Germans woke up for 6 weeks, so they've gone back to sleep. Last question, Jonathan, political. Normally we don't talk about schools because they're state issues. It's a national political show, national news show. But San Diego's Patrick Henry High School, which is the largest high school in San Diego, has dramatically cut almost to the point of non-existence advanced biology, advanced history, advanced math classes. They're saying that's in the name of equity. They haven't cut football and swimming yet because some people are bigger and stronger and faster. But it's a real story in California. Combine that with, you know, the gender police at K through three. I think the Democrats on both ends of the education issue have gone crazy. What do you hear?
Well, Republicans see this as one of their best and most potent issues. And I think if you talk to anyone who analyzed the Virginia race with Glenn Youngkin, they will tell you that the schools issue, that Terry McAuliffe completely miscalculated that issue, the power of that issue. And frankly, not, you know, I remember early in the Youngkin cycle, some Democratic strategists were sort of dismissing it as a fringe Fox News kind of thing. What it was in the end was something that moved independent voters and even, you know, soft Republicans, more conservative Democrats. And so it's a hugely powerful issue. I think Democrats understand that now to some extent, but I don't know how they're going to counter it.
They're in quicksand. This is a realignment issue. Inflation's a realignment issue, but education is a realignment issue. National security is a realignment issue. And they're realigning people all against the Democrats. The perfect storm. I don't know if it keeps up for 6 months. I pray it does. Jonathan Swan. Follow him on Twitter at Jonathan V. Swan. Read Axios to get the best from one of the best. Jonathan Swan, thank you. Always a pleasure. Stay tuned, America. I'll be right back from Inside the Beltway Live on a Wednesday morning. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway on this Wednesday morning, April the 11th. I am talking with Josh Mandel, who is, of course, from Ohio, former treasurer of the state of Ohio. I've been a guest on this show many, many times over a decade. Welcome back, Josh. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks, Hugh. Great to be on.
The closing kick is underway. I'm doing my last round of interviews with would-be GOP nominees for Senate. There are five of you left. I cannot tell who's ahead. I defy anyone to know who's ahead. But I read a story yesterday that you and Mike Gibbons got together to kick around the J.D. Vance release, that he was ahead. What say you about that?
I've not read that specific story, but you know, all of our polling shows that J.D. Vance is consistently in last place. J.D. is not a bad guy, but you know, he's a never-Trumper. And you know, one of the most powerful things that happened this campaign was, you know, a lot of the video coming out about J.D. Vance, unfortunately, just trashing Trump up and down and trashing Trump voters. And so, again, not a bad guy, but I would say here in Ohio, people are not buying what he's selling.
So the story said that you and Mike Gibbons got together after J.D. released a poll to marry your internal polling and get the Henry Gomez, who's a great political reporter in Ohio, on the same page with what your results is. Did that happen?
I have no idea, Hugh. It did. It was not. I was not involved with it. It might have been at the staff level, but
that's fine.
Sounds very inside baseball to me, but you know,
it is. But this audience loves inside baseball. They also love confrontation. I mean, this audience, you know, we know that Steve Kwan's gotten on base how many times for the Guardians in the first four games. But you and Mike Gibbons got chin to chin, JD, Josh Mandel. What was that all about? I just saw a picture.
Yeah, you know, we had a debate in Columbus, and you know, he was standing over me like I was like, you know, in the cubicle, and he was my boss standing over me, and I'm just not going to allow someone to do that. And so I stood up and we exchanged words, you know, obviously nothing physical, but we exchanged words. And, you know, I was taking him to task on the fact that he made a lot of his money by taking American companies and selling them to China. And listen, it's not illegal. He didn't break the law by doing it, but I would say it's antithetical to the Trump America First agenda. And literally, Hugh, while you know, I was defending Mike Gibbons' freedom, doing my small part in the Marine Corps, while Donald Trump was campaigning on America First and bringing American jobs back from China, back from India, back from Mexico, to Youngstown, to Dayton, to Toledo, this guy, Mike Gibbons, you know, was taking American companies and selling them to China. And yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, now has the audacity to run on a quote unquote America First platform, you know, where obviously he'll have no moral authority to actually advance it in Washington, you know, given the fact that he's gotten rich off of it. And so I'm the only candidate in the race that's pure America First. And listen, I don't think America First is a slogan. I think it's a governing philosophy. You know, when it comes to immigration, it means putting American citizens before foreigners. Not that we hate foreigners,
But the fact that we have 40,000 veterans living on the street and under bridges, we shouldn't be spending a penny on illegal immigrants when we've got all those veterans on the streets. You know, America First means prioritizing our manufacturing companies and logistics companies and transportation companies in places like Warren, Ohio.
There you go. You touched the heartstrings there. You mentioned Youngstown. I was going to fault you, Josh, for not bringing up Warren Niles. You can leave out Howland. That actually nobody lives in Howland, so you can avoid Howland. But Warren Niles, that's, I know you guys always talk about it, but really, what can be done? There is the intel went to Columbus.
Yeah, it's great. Great example. So, you know, just for those of your listeners not familiar with this intel decision, so Intel was doing not just a national search, but a global search where they were going to put their next microchip manufacturing plant, $20 billion microchip manufacturing facility, the largest in the entire world. Not only did they choose America, not only did they choose Ohio, but they chose Columbus, Ohio, as you mentioned. And, you know, I hope that the next one is maybe in Warren, Ohio, right there in the Moaning Valley, or maybe it's in Dayton, or maybe it's in Toledo, or maybe it's in Marietta. But the fact that, you know, we are motivating and inspiring American companies to build here is a great thing. And I think it's a product of President Trump shouting from the rooftops, let's put Americans first, and American businesses first. Now, let me give you a converse example. There was an auto plant that I believe it was a GM plant up in the Lorain County. While Trump was president, they announced that they were going to start manufacturing a new car in Lorain County, which is just west of the Cleveland area, and 1,300 jobs, give or take. And so they did an announcement. Trump was happy about it. The American people were happy about it. The people of Ohio were happy about it. Trump leaves the White House. Biden comes in. And then all of a sudden, the auto manufacturer said, you know, we changed our mind. We're going to do this in Mexico now.
Yeah, the first time I called the president when he was in the White House was to thank him for standing up for the Lordstown plant after GM abandoned it. I'm not surprised GM has abandoned Lorain. GM is simply took all the money and ran, and that's all they did. Josh, let me go back to, if I can, President Trump. I've had on all the Pennsylvania candidates as well. They're kind of stunned and astonished that Donald Trump endorsed Dr. Oz. What was your reaction?
I'm not following the Pennsylvania race at all. People ask me about Pennsylvania. They ask me about Georgia and Arizona and Alabama. And what I tell people, and I'll tell you, is I am laser focused on my race here in Ohio. People start voting 2 weeks from, election day is 2 weeks from Tuesday. People started voting last week. And so my 100% focus is on Ohio.
Have you given up on getting the endorsement of Donald Trump?
No, I'm doing everything I can to earn the endorsement of Donald Trump. I'd be honored to earn his endorsement. You know, I think I'm the one candidate in this race who embodies the Trump America First agenda. While most of my opponents were with Kasich to the bitter end, in 2016, I was the first statewide official to support President Trump. And, you know, I'm a fighter. And when I get to Washington, I'm not going to take a knee or lay down for Schumer, Pelosi, Biden, but I'm also not going to take a knee or lay down for the Republican Party bosses if they're acting like Democrats. And, you know, I think that's one of the many things Trump likes about me is that I'm a fighter, and I'll take on people on both sides of the aisle to stand up for the Constitution, to stand up for individual liberty, and to stand up for the America First agenda.
So, Josh Mandel, how do you get the president's attention in the closing? I mean, it would be dispositive, unlike Pennsylvania, where I think he's thrown away an endorsement. I think he's going to lose. In Ohio, he actually would secure the win for somebody if he came in strong. At this point, Ohio's so Trumpist. It's also so red. It's moving. It's early voting. Now is the time. He can't go wrong with any of the five, in my view, or any of the four that want his endorsement. How do you get it? I mean, are you working Sean? I don't talk to the president except twice annually when he comes on the show.
I mean, listen, all of us are doing everything we can to earn his support and earn his endorsement. You know, I think J.D. Vance and Jane Timken are two of the candidates, you know, who would likely still lose the race, even if they got the endorsement, because they're just so far behind in the polls. But listen, all of us are doing everything we can to earn it. I'm cautiously optimistic that I will earn the president's endorsement. You know, I know if the president endorses me, I'll definitely win the race. I'm confident I'm going to win the race regardless, and I'm doing everything I can to earn his endorsement. I'd be honored to have it.
So, Josh, what did you make of the Browns signing Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, this whole quarterback saga is with Baker Mayfield and just the whole lineage, Browns quarterback lineage is just sort of sad. But I like Deshaun Watson. I think he's a great athlete. I think Baker Mayfield wanted to what Joe Burrow ended up being and doing in Cincinnati is what Baker Mayfield envisioned for himself in Cleveland. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. Sort of young guy with the swagger taking him all the way. I like the Deshaun Watson move. I did not dislike Baker Mayfield at all, but I like the Deshaun Watson move.
That's interesting to me. I wrote a column about it, Josh, in the Post, because I'm so troubled about trading for 22 lawsuits. I know he's a fine athlete, but did it disturb you at all? Do you wonder how in the world could they do that without consulting their fan base?
It's a great question. Listen, I wish NFL owners, not just the Haslams, but I wish NFL owners all over the country consulted their fan base. But I don't, my sense of watching NFL owners, I don't think they really, give a hoot what the fans want. I think by and large, they are, it's very centralized at the top at the, president and GM level, coach level, obviously. But I think it's gotten to the point now where it's even like above the coaches. And, I think a lot of the decision-making, especially at the, skill positions, it's very like GM and president and owner driven. I don't think that's for the benefit of the teams.
Knowledgeable Browns fan. Yeah. Let me go back to the campaign, Josh. People are voting. You got 2 minutes left on the Hugh Hewitt show. What's the closing kick and the appeal for them to get out and vote early? I've heard Jane's. I've heard I haven't had Mike back on. I got to get Mike and Matt back on. But what's your close? I had JD on this week. What's your closing kick?
That I'm a fighter. The people I'm running against are not bad people. But at the end of the day, they're going to get steamrolled in Washington. And I'm the one guy who has a proven record of fighting. When John Kasich was governor, he tried to do the Obamacare Medicaid expansion in Ohio. I stood up and led the charge against him. When John Kasich was governor, he tried to institute the Common Core educational standards in Ohio. I said, we don't want the federal government anywhere near our kids' education. I led the charge and stood up to him. When John Kasich was trying to kill the pro-life heartbeat bill in Ohio, I stood up. Was the first statewide official to have the courage to stand up for the unborn and stand up for the heartbeat bill. And so time and time again, I've had the backbone to do it, and I'll do it in Washington. And whether it's taking on Schumer, Pelosi, Biden, and the leftists, or it's taking on the Republican Party bosses, in the ilk and spirit of Jim Jordan, in the ilk and spirit of Ted Cruz, who has endorsed me, in the ilk and spirit of Mike Lee, who's a strict constitutionalist who has endorsed me, I will go to Washington and I will fight. I will stand up for the Constitution. I will stand up for biblical values. I will stand up for individual liberty. And I will stand up for the Trump America First agenda. And I'm a fighter, Hugh. And listen, I might not be the most charismatic guy in the world. I'm not a movie star. I'm not a TV star. But there's one thing I am. I'm a fighter. And no one's going to push me around in Washington.
Josh Mandel, always a pleasure. I will look forward to the results. And if you are the nominee, count on unending support from me, because we got to we got to win that Ohio Senate seat. Cannot let it go from red to blue. Thank you, my friend. Josh Mandel, I've known him a long time. Welcome back, America 2 Hewitt. Tiffany Smiley has turned a lot of heads on the West Coast. She's running for Senate in Washington State. Tiffany Smiley, welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Happy to be on. Thank you so much.
Tell everyone who doesn't know anything about Washington State why this is so surprising. I've got friends up there that live near the Canadian border. I've got friends everywhere outside of King County, and they're saying Tiffany Smiley can win. So I thought, yeah. Oh, let's go check out. Tell us about you.
Word is spreading. And, for our family, I was born and raised in Washington State. I love this state, and I will never give up on it. We are here to fight, and truly our family's fight began 17 years ago. I'm a nurse. I was married to my high school sweetheart, Scotty Smiley, and he was deployed to Mosul, Iraq. And 17 years ago, he faced a suicide car bomb in Mosul. And the shrapnel from that bombing took out both of his eyes, left him paralyzed on the right side of the body and in a coma. And as a nurse, I always say, thank goodness I was a nurse, because I walked into Walter Reed and fought for him. And that's really, truly when my fight began, when I, took on the Army and fought for my husband, was a voice for him when he didn't have one. And he went on to become the first blind active duty officer to serve our country. We served our country for a whole decade with him completely blind, took on VA reform. And so our family is no stranger to uphill battles. We're no stranger to building coalitions for the greater good of others. And so that's why we're in this fight. I'm a mom of three boys, and I'm deeply, deeply worried about their future here in Washington State and in this nation. And yes, we can win, and yes, we will win, because the people of Washington State have had to experience bad policy every single day. They are living under the effects of Patty Murray and Joe Biden's bad policy. And everywhere I go, you know, we're talking about, I always say it's not Democrat or Republican issues. We're talking about American issues that are affecting families every single day here in Washington State.
Tiffany Smiley, how old are your boys?
Our boys are 14, 12, and 9.
Okay, I'm worried about your 9-year-old. He's getting beat up as you do this interview. So I just want you to, I'm the youngest of three boys, so I'm always worried about the youngest. So what, they're playing tennis beneath the tennis ball. Let me ask you about their education, Tiffany, because yes. I've been covering gender education K through 3 and the end of excellence education in San Diego's Patrick yes. Henry High School, you know, 9 through 12. Education is collapsing in America. Is it collapsing in Washington State?
It is collapsing. And people in Washington State will remember that, you know, I was 11 years old when Patty Murray was first elected, and she wow. ran as the mom in tennis shoes.
Oh, yes.
She was a preschool teacher, and she was on the school board, and she was going to fight for our children. So under her policies, our education has gotten worse. And, you know, we were a 44% average in public school system prior to the pandemic. You could imagine how those scores have considerably gone down. All three of my boys are in the public school system. And here in Washington State, our kids were out of school for almost 2 full years. And not only that, we have to get back to teaching math and reading. We have to get back to competitive quality education. I look forward to working on that in the Senate. It's top of mind for me. Our future here in America depends on the education of our children, and we have a real crisis on our hands.
Tiffany Smiley, if you
catch them up, yeah.
If you can't test it, you can't teach it. So you can't test equity. You can't test critical race theory. If we saw the test, we would be shocked and appalled. What is on the minds of parents as you travel around Washington State saying, vote for me and not Patty Murray, Tiffany Smiley?
Well, so they are really frustrated with what has happened over these last 2 years. And they had they got an inside look into what their children are actually being taught. And I say that in the regard that there are good teachers out there. And we need to ensure that we have more good teachers getting into the system. But Patty Murray has been really good at funding the system. And we need to fund the students, and parents are seeing that on every level. You know, not only that, you look at, you know, the students with special needs or, you know, have learning disabilities. They had no contact for over 6 months or more. Parents are really fired up, and they're ready to have a system that's there for their children, competitive quality education. And not only that, ensuring that our children have access and are in front of trades. You know,
yeah, you know, I used to. We got a minute left. I remember when Slade Gordon upset. I remember that Washington State can win.
Yes.
But they got to know where to go to help you. What's the website, Kathy? Tiffany Smiley.
Yes. Come join us. Sign up as a volunteer. Contribute to our campaign. We have over 24,000 unique contributors to our campaign. It is amazing what is happening out here. SmileyForWashington.com. All spelled out. SmileyForWashington.com. You can learn more about what we're doing across Washington State and join us in this grassroots movement that is absolutely catching fire.
Keep coming back, Tiffany Smiley. SmileyForWashington.com. SmileyForWashington.com. Our upset special on the West Coast. The red wave is building. It's going to hit the West Coast last, but it might take Tiffany Smiley into the United States Senate. Boy, do we got to get Patty Murray, such a creature of the swamp. I've only been here 5 years. She's been here like 25 years. And I got to tell you, she's just Chuck Schumer in tennis shoes. Stay tuned, America. I'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Generalissimo. Thank you, Ben. Thanks, all of you, for listening. If you missed anything, go over to Highly Concentrated Hugh. Sign up for the podcast, subscribe, comment, and come back tomorrow for the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Z
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.